We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Henry Frayne is at the controls. In this part of Focus, we will be talking with one of the world's leading researchers in the field of motivation. Our guest is Carol Dweck. She's a professor of psychology at Stanford University. She's here visiting the campus and will be giving a talk this evening, and I'll tell you all about that. And one of the things that we'll be talking about here is what kind of things that parents, teachers can do to encourage children to be good learners. And she says that an important idea here is that people have different ways of thinking about intelligence, and that the way people think about intelligence can make a big difference to the way that they approach new and challenging tasks, and can really determine whether the first time they don't succeed, they just give up, or whether they try again, find a different way, and in the process, maybe learn new things. And she says, interestingly enough, that maybe telling kids that they're smart is not the best strategy to get them to be good learners. She'll be giving a talk about motivation and achievement and understanding that and how it works. This is an event in the MillerCom series, and it's also a Lyle Lanier lecture. Her host for the visit is the Department of Psychology here at the University of Illinois. These programs, they're always free and open to the public, so if you're interested in hearing from her and you're in Champaign-Urbana, you can stop by the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory tonight at 7:30. Otherwise, here on the program, of course, questions are welcome. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. So you can call in. Maybe also I'll mention that there's a book that she has authored, published a couple of years ago, that explores this territory and something that you might be interested in looking at. And that book is Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. It is available now in paperback, published by Ballantine. So you can head out and look for that book. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure to be here, David.
We appreciate it. Let me start out by asking you to talk about this very key sort of idea, and that is that people think about intelligence basically in one of two ways.
Yes. Some people have what I call a fixed mindset. They believe their intelligence is just a fixed trait. They have a certain amount, and that's that. When people think of their intelligence, talents, or abilities in this way, they worry about how much they have. And they are afraid to take on tasks that might show up any deficiencies, because these deficiencies are permanent. But other people have a growth mindset. They believe their intelligence and their other qualities can be developed, cultivated over time through their efforts, through instruction. And they're the people who are real go-getters. They're not so worried about how smart they are now. They want to get smarter. They take on challenges, and they keep at things till they master them. Now, they don't necessarily think everybody's the same or anyone can be Einstein, but they know that even Einstein had to work for what he achieved.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that there are more people who have the view that intelligence is fixed. That is, what you get is what you get, mm-hmm. and that's it. There are more people who think that than there are people who think that, well, you can learn as you go along, and that it's flexible, and that maybe perseverance is more important than whatever native intelligence mm-hmm. you happen to be born mm-hmm. with.
Well, it turns out in our studies that About the same number of people will endorse the idea that it's fixed and the idea that you can cultivate it.
So it really, yeah. I guess somehow I got the idea that it was that one of the attitudes was sort of was predominant. That is, more people sort of thought, well, you know, intelligence is just something that you've got. It's the cards you're dealt, and that's
it. I think, you know, over time things have shifted. I was a student, the idea that it was fixed and the IQ test measured it was really prevalent. And now I think both messages are available in our culture.
Mm-hmm. So then I suppose the question is, if both messages are available, then how is it that some people, they grab the one message and some people grab the other?
We've been really, really interested in that in our research. And we found that it can be communicated directly when teachers or parents talk about born geniuses. They're conveying the fixed view. When they talk about people who are passionate and develop their abilities, they're communicating a growth mindset. But probably the most interesting way we've studied it is looking at the impact of the praise children get. And as you indicated at the beginning, surprisingly, we have found that when adults praise children for their intelligence, it actually puts the child in a fixed mindset. It tells the child, you have something deep within you that I can read and evaluate from your performance. And it also tells the child, that's what I value in you. And what we find when, in our experiments, we praise children for intelligence, right away they become non-learners. They don't want to take the risk of taking on a hard task where they may discredit their intelligence. And then when we give them some difficult problems to work on, they lose heart. So the self-esteem gurus told parents, you must praise your child's intelligence to make them feel confident, to motivate them to learn. But we're finding just the opposite. It makes children feel good for a little while, but it makes them afraid of learning when that's difficult and afraid of challenges. Whereas the students who are praised for their effort, the process that they engaged in, that could be their strategies, their concentration, their persistence in the face of obstacles. These children are ready to take a challenge, and when we give them difficult problems, they really stick to them. We also found in these studies that on an IQ test, after praising children's intelligence, their performance plummeted after difficulty.
You know, all of that, I'm sure people hear this and they would say, not only does that seem counterintuitive, but it goes against, I'm sure, that the impulse, the basic impulse that parents have. Because, of course, you want to praise your children when they've done well. And it would just seem a natural thing to tell them how bright you think that they are.
First of all, I think you're exactly right. Our intuitions have been retrained by the self-esteem movement, that this is the way to give children confidence and self-esteem. But also, I think you're right, it has almost become the definition of a good parent to tell children how bright, how able, how talented they are. We feel that we can hand our children self-esteem on a silver platter like that, and that's our job. Parents have told me it's been really hard to break the habit, especially when they're around other parents who are doing it. They feel like they are depriving their children of something. But parents are finding that the intelligence praise has not built their child's confidence, and that when they switch to effort or process praise, good things happen. And what the effort and process praise do, they give children a way to build and maintain their own self-esteem, because It tells them why they were successful and what they need to do to be successful again. It tells them challenges are good, and that's what I admire you for. It tells them effort and perseverance in the face of difficulty are the things that work. These are the beliefs your children need to succeed in life.
Yeah, so I think here this is maybe a little subtle, but it's an important point because you're certainly not saying to parents that they shouldn't praise their children.
I am not.
But what you're saying is, say, now think about the message that you're giving, and what you're suggesting mm-hmm. is that, you know, for example, that a parent might say to a child, you know, they were taking on some sort of a new task and say, boy, yeah, that was, I know at the beginning that was really tough and you were having a hard time, but you know, you said, I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to, instead of going this way to try and solve mm-hmm. the problem, I'm going to go this way. And darn it, you did it. And that is really great. And I'm so proud of you because you didn't give up.
Yes.
That's, you know, that's the kind you want to say. And,
yes.
you know, isn't that amazing how, you know, sometimes if you're trying to solve a problem and you just can't solve it by doing it one way,
mm-hmm.
sometimes if you say to yourself, now, is there some other way
mm-hmm.
to do this? And then you find out if the first approach didn't work,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe try something different. And maybe then you'll find out, if I go down this road
yes.
instead of going down this road, then I'll get to where I want to go.
David, I really love the way you thought through those examples. That's an example of process praise. And I think you gave some really great examples. You're at the same time you're praising, you're teaching your child to love difficulty and persevere. That is the greatest gift you can give your child. And actually, even more than praise, it's appreciation and encouragement.
Mm-hmm. But that's, I guess, then really parents have to kind of, they have to be prepared. They have to have those little speeches ready to go
mm-hmm.
sort of beforehand so that they have thought about what's the message we would like to
give. Yes. And I think you're exactly right. Parents need to be thinking about what's the message I'm sending to my child. So suppose your child does something very quickly and easily. Usually we think to say, you are so good at that. But what are we saying? You're only good at something when you do it quickly and easily? You're only smart when you get an A without studying? That's a dangerous message, and I think you can hear that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you say, gee, that you did that so quickly and easily, let's do something challenging you can learn from.
And I think that, you know, I know one of the things that you have looked at and people have thought about is you say you take a child who, when they're younger, say when they're in in elementary school, they're just wizards. And it seems like everything comes easy to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the problem is that at that point, things are coming easy to them. So then what happens, they get into middle school, the work becomes more difficult, and they start to have more difficulty. And now, you know, how do you deal with that child that, you know, when things came easy for a while, they didn't have to work that hard, but then we're getting to the point where they're going to have to start working harder. And they're maybe going to start questioning themselves. You have to get into a whole different way of thinking and getting them to think about, well, what's going on and particularly what learning is all about.
Exactly, exactly. This is precisely why so many really bright children stop working in school at some point.
Mm-hmm.
They've coasted along. Everyone has told them how brilliant they are. They look at hard work as something that other less capable children have to do, but not them. And then at some point, the work becomes difficult. And they freak out. They've never learned how to apply themselves. They've never learned how to push through difficulties. And these children have a really hard time. Many of them decide they'd rather retire while they're still king of the hill. They'd rather retire with their idea of being brilliant intact than try something hard. And the parents are tearing out their hair and they're saying, you're so smart, you're so smart, if only you worked hard. But that's exactly the reason they stopped working. So you'd still think they were smart and not see that they had to stress and strain just like the other kids.
Yeah. I saw an interview one of the interviews that I read that you gave when you were talking about this. I like what you said so much I wrote it down, that the problem sometimes is that too many students think effort is only for the inept.
Yes. Yes.
You get and that's, you know, completely the wrong message. You really want to give the other message. But if you just sailed along for such a long time, then and you suddenly find yourself having to work, then that might seem kind of strange if you're going along through, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, and sixth grade, and then suddenly you come to some point when it really gets harder.
Yeah, and you panic and you think, oh, maybe I'm one of them, not the special person.
Yeah, and they don't want, I'm sure that they don't want to disappoint their parents who think they're smart, but they also, you know, if you've been telling yourself, if you've been thinking yourself as a smart kid for such a long time, then, you know, if information starts to come along that says maybe you're not, then I suppose some people, their impulse is to say, well, we're going to reject that data because that doesn't fit. You know, that's not what I have come to believe about myself.
That's right. And do you know, I get a lot of letters from people who are now adults, who are child geniuses, prodigies, who have never graduated from college and who have never found a meaningful career. In essence, people gave them a false promise. They said, oh, you're so brilliant, you're going to do great things. It led them to believe that if they just sat there with their brilliance, success would find them. But it doesn't work that way. Success doesn't come looking for you. You have to work for it. Everyone, no matter how brilliant they are, works. And research is showing the ones who work the hardest are the ones who make the great contributions. So, teach your child to love hard work, to know how to work hard, to understand that effort is what powers their ability and increases their ability. That's the gift you give them, not self-esteem on a silver platter.
We have some callers we'd like to bring into the conversation. Our guest for this hour is Carol Dweck. She is a professor of psychology at Stanford University and has done a lot of writing and research on the subject of motivation. And if you would like to read more on this subject, some of the kind of things that we're talking about, you might look at her book, Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. Also, if you are here in and around Champaign-Urbana, she will be talking about this very subject. This is a speech in the MillerCom series. She's being hosted here on the campus by the Department of Psychology, and she'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Spurlock Museum in the Knight Auditorium, and anyone who is interested should attend, should feel free. Questions here are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with some callers here. We'll start with someone in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, David, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting, very provocative program. Thanks for having it on. A couple of observations and comments, and perhaps your guest could comment on them. Being a proud father of two straight-A children, the interesting thing that I've found, and it seems to have always found, that you take a straight-A child, and that child is inevitably in band, in student council, you know, involved with the whole coming float. In other words, the more they do, the more they do. And I was just wondering, back 1,000 years ago when I went to college, we were taught something called locus of control. The most important thing a parent can give their child is locus of control, meaning that the child has the ability to impact its own future. What they do does make a difference. And I was just wondering how that would play into your guest's thoughts. And then last, you stole a little bit of my thunder, but I was curious about these prodigies. In other words, once in a while you read about a 10-year-old graduating, you know, medical school or law school or something. Obviously, the parents, while being supportive, this is something that the child obviously just had. And I was just wondering, do those people burn out, or do they stay with it? You know, it's some sort of a magical gift. And I'll go ahead and ring off. A very interesting show. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Two very interesting questions. One about locus of control. And again, this is the idea of teaching children that they are the kind of origin of their success and what they do matters. The mindsets are related in the following way. You can have an internal locus of control within either mindset, but in a fixed mindset, you can lose it more easily. For example, in a fixed mindset, if you encounter an obstacle, and obstacles mean you're not good at something, you don't have the ability, suddenly it's not in your hands anymore. But in a growth mindset, when you hit an obstacle, well, that requires more effort, new strategies, maybe more learning. It's still in your power to succeed. So a growth mindset helps you maintain that internal sense that you can achieve. And then the prodigies. First of all, I always ask, what is it that they're born with? Are they born with an ability ready-made, or are they born with a fascination? All prodigies have tremendous interest, obsession with numbers or words or whatever their area of expertise is. I think it's got to be this combination of ability and fascination that makes someone into a prodigy or a genius over time. Do they burn out? It depends. Research shows that it's not always the prodigies who are the great contributors to their field. Sometimes they burn out, and I wonder if it's because people made such a big thing out of their being a genius that they retreated into a fixed mindset, stopped loving learning, stopped taking risks, stopped capitalizing on their mistakes. I think when being a prodigy turns into being an adult contributor is when that love of learning remains, that love of growth. Because again, your genius or your abilities don't take you right to success. For a great discovery, you have to have the passion, the dedication, and the ability to withstand the challenges and setbacks.
Well, again, other questions are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. Here, a real important thing here is that, and I know what you want to stress, is that particularly as when students are doing what they do in the classroom, that what this is all about is it is not about proving how smart you are. It's about learning.
Yes.
That's the idea. That's what we want here. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about the connections between the flexible mindset.
Yes.
And learning and how it is that the one really helps to promote the other.
Yes. You hit the nail right on the head. The key point is to keep children passionate about learning. And what we find in our research is within a growth mindset, the first priority is learning. The child's main goal is learning. And we find that as a result of this emphasis on learning, the children in a growth mindset earn higher grades across challenging school transitions. Even university students in the pre-med curriculum, if they focus on learning rather than grades or looking smart, they earn higher grades in their challenging organic chemistry course. The fixed mindset puts a premium on proving your intelligence over and over, looking smart. It's permanent. It's fixed. You better have it. And then there's this belief, if you have it, it will just take you there. So those students will not study as effectively, will not manage their time as effectively, will not keep themselves as motivated, because for them, ability is everything. And if they have it, they'll succeed. Whereas in a growth mindset, because learning is the first priority, they make sure they learn effectively, and that's what works.
Okay, let's go to, I think, someone in Chicago. Line number one. Hello.
Hello. The question on child prodigies again.
Yeah.
Have you read the book, The Talent Code?
Mm-hmm.
You are familiar with this book?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead, yes.
Could you talk about how this book talks about child prodigies and how they learn and so on?
I'm not sure I can recite that portion of the book, but the point of the book is, or do you want to say a little bit more about that? Okay. The point of the book is that talent is not enough, that people need to develop their talent. So did you want to say more? Are you still there, and do you want to say more about prodigies?
Sure. I think the book goes into how ability is not necessarily built in, but how it can be developed.
Yes.
And there's quite a bit of good material there that explains how people learn that might be quite relevant to your show right now.
Yes, exactly. And I think the message in the talent code is very consistent with the message of mindset. And also, the work that has been appearing in many of those books, Outliers, as well as Talent Is Not Enough, is the work that shows that people we end up calling geniuses or people who make great creative contributions are the people who engage in deliberate practice. This is the research of Anders Ericsson. Deliberate practice involves not just capitalizing on your strengths, but systematically addressing your weaknesses over long periods of time. And again, the people who become geniuses are the ones who work the hardest, stretch themselves the most, and overcome impediments, not the people who are necessarily born with the greatest talent.
Well, I hope that gets at the comments of the caller. Let's go and talk with somebody else. This will be someone in Urbana and on line four, I think. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was very interested in once I turned on the show today, because last night I was in my daughter's home and her three-year-old was playing with one of those handheld games, electronic games, and he brought it to her for help, and she was trying to cook, but she stopped what she was doing and sat down, and she had difficulty with it, and he reached around behind her neck because he was on her lap and said, "Just try again, Mommy, just try again." And he did this a number of times until she actually succeeded in what she was trying to do. And then he rewarded her by congratulating her efforts. So that's really all I had to share.
All right.
Thank you. And that's my work.
Bye-bye.
Well, it seems that maybe some children, do they come with that attitude? Or is that something that the child would have actually learned that maybe without intending to, that the parents had already given the child that lesson?
My hunch is the parents have given the child that lesson because it's so explicit. There was an article on my work, a cover story in New York Magazine a couple of years ago, and it was circulated very, very widely. And it was teaching parents to do this very thing. Parents panicked to learn that praising intelligence was not effective and not something good for their children. Many of them formed clubs to break themselves of the habit and to share ideas about how to praise effectively. Many schools have tutored parents in how to praise mm-hmm. their children. So my hunch is that the mother picked up on it somehow.
Okay, to another caller, Clay City, Illinois, line number two, right here. Hello.
Yes. I have raised three daughters, and they've all been very successful. They've all got to—I'm kind of proud of the fact that I've got two that have master's degrees and one working on another one. But my philosophy was not to make it easy for them. I encouraged them to go out and make their own money, and they had an investment in their education. I think, and one thing I noticed that my wife is a school teacher, is that a dumbing down of the schools to make inclusive so everybody can be involved, and a situation where someone who achieves a great deal is not seems to be not be rewarded for the hard work and effort that they put in. What about this national trend? I'm told that a lot of students coming out now, when they compete with Asians and other people in other schools, their work ethic is just not what it should be, and they find themselves lacking and having a difficult time getting through the first year of college and having a real mindset that doesn't change. What can I do as I've got a granddaughter now. I mean, I want to encourage her, but how do I go about motivating her at the same time?
I think you raise a number of excellent points. I think another fallout of the self-esteem movement was to discourage us from challenging children. The idea was that children should feel good all the time, should never feel frustrated, should never feel inept. That got translated into giving them easy work, praising everyone, instead of challenging them and rewarding effort, perseverance, mastery in the face of difficulty. Every student needs to be challenged to the utmost and needs to be taught, not just challenged, they need to be guided through to know how to engage with difficult learning. That's the only way they're going to fulfill their potential. It's a shame if students who work hard to master things aren't appreciated in the way that they should be. And if we're going to compete with the Chinas and the Indias and the Japans, we are going to have to step up our expectations for our students and have a challenging curriculum that we guide them through with expert teachers. That's the only way we're going to remain in the forefront in the 21st century.
Well, thank you for your comment.
All right, thanks. Well, what in light of all of that then, what's the best way for teachers and schools to recognize achievement?
That's a great question. Well, you know, in the old days, we used to have a separate grade for effort. I don't recommend that. That was kind of like the consolation prize. Who wants a bad grade for their work and then a high grade for effort? And who cares if you get an A if you have a low grade for effort? What some teachers are doing now is they're folding into the grade. Maybe a quarter of the grade is based on whether you stretched yourself, challenged yourself, persevered in the face of difficulty, whether you took on some extra projects to do, whether you collaborated, whether you tutored another student. These are all things that are part of learning that we need to show we value, and we need to show we value them in a concrete way. So if a student has coasted to a high grade or hundreds on tests but has not stretched him or herself or has not persevered on difficult work, that's not an A. It's just not an A, and they've got to learn to cope with that. I learned of a high school in Chicago recently when students don't master a unit, they get a grade of not yet. So it's not a failure, it's a not yet. And that beautifully captures the trajectory of learning. Students are not ashamed. They'll go around saying, how many not yets do you have? They then need to initiate a retaking of the unit until they've mastered it.
Is it a good idea or a bad idea to take the kids who seem to be the top performers, measured however you measure that, and break them out and put them into special classes or give them some sort of special category, whether you say that this is gifted or whatever word you choose to use to describe them? Is that a good idea or not?
It's a difficult question. The whole question of tracking or gifted programs is perennial question. And I don't have a stand on whether it's good or bad, but what I have a stand on, well, I have several stands. One is that whatever you call it, those kids have to challenge themselves, and children who are not in that highest glorious track have to be challenged. And every student has to know that it's through effort, hard work, and perseverance that they're going to fulfill their potential. The other thing is there's a new view of talent and giftedness. Two definitive volumes have recently been published, state-of-the-art volumes, very clearly stating that talent and giftedness are not what we used to think they are. They're not something we measure at one point in time, categorize children, and then glorify them. Talent and giftedness are dynamic qualities. They can wax, they can wane. So our job as educators now is not just to measure and categorize, it's to understand how to develop talent, how to nurture it and sustain it over time.
We are talking this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Carol Dweck. She's professor of psychology at Stanford University and has done a lot of writing and research on motivation. She's here to give a talk and will speak tonight on the U of I campus. And if you're interested, also, you might want to look at her book, Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. It's now available in paperback, published by Ballantyne. And questions here are welcome. We have several, and we will take as many as we can. The next person in line is in Urbana. And line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Ages ago, well, more than 20 years ago, there was a Bill Moyers had a program on PBS called The World of Ideas. And one of the people he interviewed was Peter Drucker, who made the remark, and I'd like your comment on this remark that he made, that the things in life that one is good at, you don't know because those sort of things come to you fairly easily. It's the things in life you're not very good at that you struggle with. In my personal academic experience, I discovered after taking numerous art courses, as an example, I wasn't any good at it, and that was just all there was to it. But I found out I had a flair for writing, and I followed that instead. So I don't know how this fits in with your book and this topic, but your comments on that, please. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't find our strengths and build on them, but I think we don't always know that our weaknesses are insurmountable. And the people who get farthest in life, research is showing, are people, yeah, they can capitalize on their strengths and run with their strengths, but they need to address their weaknesses as well. I love it that you say you aren't any good at art, because in my book, I have permission to reproduce pictures, self-portraits, by students who took Betty Edwards' course, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. When you look at the pictures that the students drew on the first day of her seminar, the self-portraits, some of them are pathetic. They're almost like stick figures. 5 days later, at the end of the course, the same people again drew self-portraits, and they are amazing. You would say that every single one of them was talented, and it bore no relationship to how good or bad they had been at the beginning in art. And do you know, a lot of research shows that your entering ability is in many areas is not that highly predictive of your performance later on with training. So you don't know often what you're capable of with dedication and training. Again, I'm not saying people should find their weakness and make that their profession, but I'm saying that we never know what we're capable of until we give it a really, really good shot. And I think in the end, the lesson is follow your passion, but don't be afraid to address your weaknesses in order to take your passion as far as you can.
All right. Again, we'll go on to some other callers and next talk with someone in Champaign on line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm enjoying this show immensely. I wanted to include the components relevance, excellence, and example to make a couple points. It seems to me that this mindset that's ideal for learning is readily transmitted through traditional sports culture and also in martial arts culture. Really good mentors almost never praise a student, yet they never criticize harshly or destructively either. There's a striving for excellence that's an ideal, and it's emphasized that no one ever reaches that ideal. So there is no graduation. There is no gold star that's ultimate, that no matter how well you do, the goal is to continue to learn, to continue to grow. As regards relevance, in those arenas, you can't falsely build someone's self-esteem. They took a punch or they didn't. They won the game or they didn't. So there's some reality there, and you're validated for persisting and picking yourself up and so forth. And the other thing I found is that the mindset is absolutely contagious. If kids are around their parents and see their parents really striving hard, really setting high standards for themselves, they'll succeed later. They'll have their own independent gyroscope that doesn't need to be artificially buoyed. Anyway, that's what came to mind listening to this topic, and I'm very interested to hear
your
talk.
Well, thank you for the comment. You can respond to that however you would like.
You've raised several really, really interesting points. First of all, the world of sports, and I have a chapter in my book on sports, and I've been working with a Major League Baseball team. It turns out that there's plenty of fixed mindset in the sports world. That's where the whole myth of the natural arose. Mm-hmm. Someone who is naturally talented, who had the right build for the sport, who moved in the right way. And many an athlete has hit the wall because that athlete just coasted on ability. Recently, I gave a talk to the top athletes in Scotland. Every single one of them said they were not number one as teenagers. The number one athletes coasted along and eventually faded. They never learned to work hard, like our child prodigies. These top athletes, the ones who had gone to the Olympics or won national medals, had been 3, 4, or 5. They knew they had to work if they were going to overtake the people ahead of them. So it's essential that people in sports have a growth mindset, but it isn't universal that they have it. Also, because of the self-esteem movement, and I don't want to make that my whipping boy, but because of the self-esteem movement, there are cases in which everybody gets a trophy, whether they worked hard and learned and improved or not. So I don't know if sports, again, is always a forum for challenging and for automatically learning a growth mindset. I agree with you. Expert tutors, there's research by my colleague at Stanford, Mark Lepper, on expert tutors. They don't do a whole lot of explicit praising. They give information. They guide. They're almost like expert dancing teachers, the way they lead you around the room as though you know the steps, they are able to lead students with little hints and questions to the right answer. And that's really a great skill. But parents want to praise, and so I'm telling them how to praise in the right way. And then what was the final part?
I think you responded pretty well to the comments of the caller. And I think actually what I want to do is try to get at least one more caller in here.
Okay.
Because we've got a couple of minutes left and we have some people holding. And I want to talk, let's see, how about Champagne, line number two? Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I remember in terms of psychology a while back that individual differences was a thing that was talked about, and that I always felt the importance of pretesting, you know, in a course where you find out where a student is, and then actually you give part of the credit from the standpoint of how much that person has grown. In other words, improvement in a particular course.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, if you don't pretest, you don't know where people are at. Another issue is that was your principal, you know, the charter schools, when they said, well, you'd take children, if they were sort of like music, you'd start them with music, and then you'd build on that, you know, that kind of thing. Does that fit in with your concept, I would assume?
Or not? Okay. Pre-testing, I think that's a great idea. First of all, it gets kids used to getting things wrong, and it puts everything into a learning framework. This is what you didn't know. You studied, you worked, you listened in class, and this is what you know now. So I think pretesting is excellent, and rewarding for improvement is also excellent.
And what about, you know, with these charter schools where they, again, would have somebody, if you're interested in music, that way they would be sort of motivated, and then they'd work it into other areas.
Yes, I think it's great to capitalize on what students are already interested in, especially if they're not interested in the academic work. It's a good way to get them into it.
And then finally, discipline. Because I used to teach, and I take the meaning of discipline is that you have to be disciplined in order to, you have to learn sort of the jargon or the terminology before you have to build. And a lot of them really wanted to skip by that. They didn't understand why they would have to learn this or that. So anyway, great program.
Discipline, important. But what we're finding is that when we teach students the growth mindset, we have programs now and studies that, in which we have taught students the growth mindset over time, they become interested in learning. We teach them that every time they stretch themselves to learn something new, their brains form new connections, and they get smarter over time. And the students tell us, they picture their brains forming new connections when they're in school, or that every time they think of not studying, they think, no, my brain won't form new connections. And in this way, the learning becomes intrinsically motivating. And a lot of the discipline problems disappear. Kids act up in school because they're afraid of looking stupid, or they are worried that they're going to be tested and judged by the teacher. So they just opt out. But when it's about their own brains growing, they take advantage of those opportunities.
I'm sorry to say we have about maybe 2 minutes left. These days, and for a while now, one of the big buzzwords in education has been accountability. Mm-hmm. People say to the schools, we want you to demonstrate that the children are learning. And it seems that maybe the easiest way to do that is with standardized testing. And now so much importance has been put on high-stakes testing, even the kind of support that schools are going to get from the government. It's come down to money. The kids have to perform or the schools won't get the money. Seems the tough thing here is it is not as easy to measure learning and to measure kids' ability to think, to take on a challenge, that kind of thing. That's not easy to measure with a standardized test or to come up with some kind of a number.
Yes.
That seems like the schools are in a really tough spot. And to do what it is you're suggesting, and what I think a lot of people would say, yeah, that's the right approach, that's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy, especially because the teachers are also in a straitjacket. They can't stretch and experiment and learn new things the way they might want to. But I think a hopeful thing is that the kinds of feedback I'm recommending, the kinds of mindset teaching I'm recommending, can be easily incorporated into any curriculum. It's a way that a teacher presents a unit as everybody's capable of learning this. I'm here to collaborate with you on learning this. The way they give feedback, process praise, constructive criticism, the way they motivate students. And also, teaching students, the test is not a measure of their intelligence, their potential, or their ability to learn over time. It's just a measure of what they know right now and can show on the test. All these things can be easily incorporated into any classroom structure. Mm.
Our guest, Carol Dweck, is professor of psychology at Stanford University. If you're here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you'd like to hear more from her. She'll be talking about understanding motivation and achievement tonight at 7:30 on the U of I campus. This is an event in the MillerCom series. She's being hosted here by the Department of Psychology. She'll be speaking at 7:30 in the Knight Auditorium at Spurlock Museum on South Gregory. It is free and open to the public. Anyone who is interested can stop by. And then if you'd like to read more on the subject, you might want to look at her book, Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. It's now out in paperback. It's published by Ballantyne. Thanks very much for being here.
A pleasure. Thank you.